Good morning, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Joshua Dolan. Josh, how are you this morning?
Pretty great.
Good, good. It's good to have you here. So we start this question, the show, with a big question: who are you? And just let you take it from there for a few minutes, and then we'll cut to some music.
Sure. Well, I am a very busy guy. I work at Cornell Cooperative Extension, and in the last year and a half, I got a new position for Eat Smart New York, which is a statewide nutrition program, and I'm the community and school garden specialist for the Finger Lakes, so I cover 11 counties.
Wow.
So I'm running all over, spending a lot of time up in Rochester nowadays, Steuben County, mm-hmm. Chemung County, and Tompkins County, doing a lot of youth programming primarily, but also trying to build coalitions and bring people together who are working on community and school garden issues. Mm-hmm. And try to figure out what the common threads are and share resources and knowledge.
Okay, okay.
So that's my day job.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm an entrepreneur. I have a small maple syrup company called Sap Squatch just outside of town in Enfield. That keeps me pretty busy. I'll probably be out there after the show pulling the last of my taps and finishing the cleanup project,
for the season,
which is very extensive. And probably dig up some ramps while I'm there. I have two kids, Gaia and Leona. Gaia's actually, her birthday is today. She just turned 14.
Oh, wow.
And Leona turned 7 back in February. So that's kind of my main focus in life is, if I'm not with them, I'm working and, you know, earning money. And,
right.
And also trying to make the world better for them. So,
yeah.
I'm pretty involved in activism. Right now, the issue is the primary. I kind of feel a heightened sense of responsibility since I am registered green. So I can't vote because of New York State primary laws. But I've been doing as much as I can online to raise questions about the Clinton campaign and have done some canvassing for Bernie and mm-hmm. Just really excited. It's an exciting time in history. You know, New York has never really played into the it's usually been wrapped up by the time the primary comes to New York and
been decades since decades, this mattered. Yeah.
So it's really exciting and also super important that voters in New York are aware of the issues mm-hmm. and know where the candidates stand on those issues. And, you know, over the years, I've been involved in a lot of different activism campaigns. I was part of the Occupy movement here in Ithaca. Mm-hmm. I've been really supportive of Black Lives Matter. I also am part of the permaculture movement. That's kind of mm-hmm. a common thread since I've been in Ithaca. One of the projects I'm really proud of that I've been involved in over the last couple of years was the development of a permaculture park project at Conley Park, adjacent to the Science Center. So we've been planting lots of edible plants in the park, gradually replacing some of the ornamental things mm-hmm. to make it more useful to the community, and also to show that edible plantings can be beautiful and really enhance our public landscapes. So that project's been really successful. We've got a lot of press about it. We had a really successful online fundraising campaign. We had the mayor down there last spring. He planted his first tree ever. So we have one tree that I affectionately call Pawpaw Myrick. That's his baby. And then I also am involved here at the station. I have a show that's alternate Saturdays called Sound the Alarm. Yesterday was a very exciting show. I always have a featured guest that does some kind of music. So yesterday it was Astrohawk, and he was playing tracks off his new album, Kinetic Soul Warriors, which was an album that was produced using solar power from his home studio. And then during the second half of the show, I had my friend, who's a psychic love advisor, Michelle Mentor, and we actually got a call from Bernie Sanders during the program. It wasn't actually Bernie Sanders. It was a complete hoax, which I've always wanted to be involved in a good hoax.
Uh-huh.
I think it was very successful.
Community radio, having fun with
exactly.
us all.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't get to pull a good April Fool's prank this year, so I figured it's still April.
Right.
What the heck?
Right. Yes, it's grandfather did.
Yeah.
So what would you like to start with musically this morning?
Let's see. I'm pretty sentimental, and there's a lot of great local music out there. I guess the... I don't know if he's the godfather of the local music scene, but he might as well be. This is Richie Stearns.
Sure.
One, two, three. Put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone. And let's pretend that we're together all alone. I'll tell the man to turn his jukebox way down low. And you can tell your friend there with you, he'll have to go. Whisper to me, tell me, do you love me? Or is he holding you the way I do? Though love is blind, make up your mind. I've got to know. Should I hang up, or will you tell him? The words I wanna hear when you're with another man. Darling, will you answer yes or no? You know I will understand. Whisper to me, tell me, do you love me? Your mind, I've got to know. Should I hang up, or will you tell him he'll have to go? Friend there with you,
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Josh Dolan. So, Josh, tell us about that piece.
Well, that was Richie Stearns featuring Kerry Rodriguez, He'll Have to Go. It's a classic George Jones tune, and I wanted to play that because it kind of ties into my activism a little bit. Richie and I have been arrested together over at Crestwood as part of the We Are Seneca Lake movement.
Sure.
So we've played together a couple times now over there. The first was during the musicians-themed arrest day, and then at my last arrest over there, which was last month. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Cool. So, Josh, what experiences have kind of helped shape who you are, what you care about? You know, what did you go through that kind of helped focus your life? You know, experience, whatever. Lots of things come together, but what happened?
Well, the summer I turned 12, I was working for my mom in her, she was renting a vegetarian restaurant outside of Naples, New York, called Wild Winds. And I was the weekend closing dishwasher. So I was working from like 4 p.m. till 1 a.m. At 12, and it was horrible. I guess that kind of set the tone for my work ethic later in life.
Uh-huh.
But I was rescued from that summer of hell when my aunt suggested that I be sent to summer camp up in Canada. Some family friends had their boys attending that camp for several summers prior to that. So they sent me up to Camp Pathfinder, which is in Algonquin Park on Source Lake, and it's on an island in the middle of the lake. So it's you're really like you're out in the middle of nowhere, and then you have to travel a mile over the water to get to the camp. Mm-hmm. So there was no escaping, and the focus of the camp was canoe trips. So I learned all about canoeing, and you know, it was just a really idyllic situation. We had games every night, some really cool, like, we had all island capture the flag and jailbreak. And then every, near the end of every, session at the camp, there would be this big scavenger hunt, which was kind of like the peak of the summer. And then there was also like the canoe regatta, all sorts of really cool stuff like that. And I was originally supposed to go for 3.5 weeks that first summer, but I decided I just wanted to stay the whole summer. So I ended up staying for 7 weeks.
Wow.
And then ended up, I went for 4 summers, and the last year I was a CIT, so I was there for 8 weeks and, you know, working. I learned through that experience, I learned all about the woods and, you know, how to use my body and feel that sense of strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during that time period, I had hit puberty, and you know, by my third summer, I was the kid that was carrying the heaviest pack, and then also volunteering to carry the boats, which was a counselor job. But I really wanted to like kind of prove myself,
sure,
not just to myself, but to, you know, the people around me. So
it's kind of a team sport, that life.
Yeah, and I think you know, it was really isolated, and the trips were really grueling. We prided ourselves at the camp on being the toughest summer camp in the park. We had songs about the other camps that I can't repeat on the air.
Yes, I understand. But the pride lingers.
Yeah, we kind of fashioned ourselves after the voyageurs, which were the French fur traders that traveled all over Canada in canoes and big war canoes they used mostly.
What did you learn about yourself those summers?
I learned endurance. You know, there were sometimes, we traveled in wooden boats, which were twice as heavy as the Kevlar boats that a lot of people used. Right. And we had to straddle our packs because the wooden boats were really tippy. You couldn't just sit on the pack. You had to straddle it. So that was one thing. You could be on a lake, you know, paddling into a headwind. The biggest lake in the park was called Opiango, which means big wind.
Uh-huh.
And you'd be paddling all out for 4 hours.
Sure.
And you'd look over, and there would be some touries, we call them, having a fire on their campsite. And you'd be paddling, and like an hour later, you'd look over, and they'd still be right there because you hadn't moved at all.
Right, right.
That was just kind of, that's a metaphorical for how those canoe trips were sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were eating, you know, we had this bread that we took that was called brat, Slicer brat, I think it was called. And we used it for football. Once we used it to patch a big hole that was cracked in the bow of one of our boats.
Uh-huh. Once it absorbed a little water, it just stuck right in there.
It just stuck in there. You had a little duct tape.
Yeah.
It was all good.
Yeah. It sounds like what they would have taken on the sailing ships when they went out in the 19th century.
Or yeah, exactly. Yeah, because we were out for 10, 15, 18, 20 days at a time.
Wow.
And needed to carry everything with us. Mm-hmm. So we had to have tough food for tough boys.
Interesting. So was that your escape from doing dishes in the summer?
Yeah. And that was the first time I was really away from my family for an extended period.
Uh-huh. And do you come from a big family or?
No, I have a half brother and three stepsisters that I don't really keep in touch with anymore. But,
right. So you're kind of an only child.
Single mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, me and my brother grew up together.
Yeah.
But my mom was single and, you know, she was actually married like 4 times. So there was, at times there was kind of a stream of boyfriends, and then at other times there was just the one loser she had picked at the moment.
So you had a complicated start.
Yeah, it was rough. And the summer camp was kind of, a great escape from that.
Uh-huh.
It meant a lot.
Right. And it meant stability, I would imagine.
Yeah, although there was some, you know, messed up stuff that happened. You know, it's an all-boys camp, so
right.
you can imagine.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. But it also means a different relationship with men than when you're in a, you know, when you've got men you've chosen to be with as opposed, or boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to being just whoever happens to be passing through the house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. So what brought you to the Ithaca area?
Well, after my oldest daughter was born, I was 24 and kind of, I had met, her mom at a rainbow gathering and we had, conceived Gaia pretty quickly after meeting. So it wasn't meant to be. So I needed to find a place, where I could, you know, work and kind of grow into all the things that I was interested in at the time.
Right.
And a lot of that was based on having a kid and, really having a sense of purpose for the first time where I knew I needed to figure out what to do with my life. And it revolved around, my year 2000 New Year's resolution was I'm going to save the world. And I didn't know what that meant at the time, but, I had the internet for the first time when I was living. I was living back in Steuben County where I grew up with my partner at the time and daughter, and was doing a lot of research online about sustainability. So that's where I discovered permaculture and all the other sustainable practices and technologies that were available at the time. And I knew, based on my experience as a kid and as a young adult coming over to Ithaca, that this was a place where that stuff was possible. Steuben County is 3-1 Republican ever since FDR, which is saying a lot.
Yeah.
So I needed to get out of there. I came over here and I first settled at a place called Jira Farm, which is out on German Crossroad. There was 4 or 5 guys living there at any given time. And we were going to start this permaculture farm. We actually had one guy that was like our Harry Potter. He was living under the stairs in this little broom closet. And there wasn't much privacy there. And we really didn't know what the heck we were doing.
Did you have your daughter in tow at that point? Or
No, she was visiting occasionally. Yeah. But she was still a toddler at that point.
Uh-huh.
But the first day I was in Ithaca, I was originally working on an organic farm over on Seneca Lake and hitchhiking back and forth. And then the first day I decided to look for a job here in Ithaca, I was coming down from the Annabelle Taylor Library up at Cornell, or the Alternatives Library at Annabelle Taylor, and walked by the ABC Cafe, and I saw there was a sign in the window. I grabbed it, walked in, and was working there within 2 days.
Wow.
And I ended up being there for 7 years. So, and that, the ABC Cafe, which doesn't exist anymore, but it was a vegetarian co-op originally, and it was kind of the crossroads and the hub for the alternative community in Ithaca in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it was like even vegan, I think.
There was a lot of vegan options,
Yeah. And there may have been that back in the day, it was Cabbage Town. I'm conflating those two. Yeah.
But the ABC, was because it was situated up on Stewart Ave next to the Chapter House, it was, like I said, a crossroads. The community gathered there, but also the students came. So and it was a self-selected group of students. So you got the really bright-eyed, creative types that were there. A lot of art shows all the time. It was the best room for acoustic music in town.
I remember it well.
Yeah, the folks that worked there were just, you know, everyone had their own really unique story and was doing something else on the side, whether it was art or music or or whatever, activism. So,
So you kind of fell into that for 7 years.
Yeah.
So half of your time in Ithaca.
Yeah, my mom had a catering business the whole time I was growing up. She still does. And she, you know, obviously wanted me to learn how to work early on.
Right.
And wanted me to learn how to wait tables, especially because she said that I would never want for work if I knew how to wait tables. And that's absolutely true. If you can, if you're a good server, you can make it anywhere.
Right. Yeah. My mom wanted me to learn to garden.
Yeah.
And she was actually trying to entertain me in the garden when I was like 3 or 4 years old. And I made my first garden mistake, which was I pulled all the pepper plants and left all the weeds.
Oh yeah.
But, that was a childcare mistake on her part that I just participated in.
Yeah. I was in my mom's garden a lot too. And, I wasn't allowed to touch any plants but weeds.
Yeah.
So a couple of those summers I just had like prickly amaranth spines in my hands all the time.
Yeah. I think she looked the wrong. I mean, I'm one of seven kids, so I think she looked the other way one time, and I just went through and did what I thought was right, and it wasn't.
Yeah,
and that, but you learn at an early age.
I think that through my work, I work with children a lot.
Oh yeah.
Doing gardening, and I think that's one of the number one things that you can teach kids how to do, to teach them self-reliance and teach them about the natural world, you know, and where their food comes from.
And show them the delight of consuming something and sharing it with others, consuming it themselves and sharing it with others that they have produced.
Yeah. I think the garden is a good metaphor for life because you can, any life lesson that you need to learn, you can probably find it in the garden.
Neat. Let's go to a mute song. What would you like to go to next?
Let's see.
Take it.
Oh. Still playing here.
I pushed it up too soon. Tell me when.
Let's do another local track here. This is Jenny Stearns, and this is probably my favorite song of hers. This is Shades of Blue.
You painted your room in shades of blue, hung curtains to keep out the sun. Still as silence, you lay in your bed as rivers run deep in your head. You've gone. So far away, no road will lead me there. I need to be closer to you and your many shades of blue. You're the grass that sways beneath the black ice, the fire that burns underground. Whoa. what sent you there so far from me, where nothing will do you harm. You've gone again so far.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Josh Dolan. So, how have your commitments, you referred to lots of activist work that you've done, how have your commitments changed? How have they deepened? How have you moved from one thing to something else? I mean, I want to look at your life and how it's unfolded.
Yeah, I guess the number one commitment is to my children. I don't have them all the time. Gaia, who's 14, she makes her own schedule, so I don't see very much of her. But Leo and I have her half time. We have kind of a interesting fluctuating schedule that's kind of every other weekend and then a couple days a week that are kind of set in stone. So basically, everything else revolves around that schedule at this point.
Sure.
I guess with activism, I've been very committed to the anti-fracking movement and now the We Are Seneca Lake movement. So whenever I'm available, I'm there. I try to show up. And I guess the other commitment that's changed recently is separating from my wife in the last year and a half. That was kind of like the cornerstone of my life was that relationship and raising our child together. And when we separated, you know, I kind of that commitment left. I mean, we're still committed on a certain level. In terms of our responsibility, our responsibility to each other is still there, based around rearing a child together. I no longer have that commitment in terms of a romantic relationship. I guess at first that was you had asked me off the air like what. When everything fell apart, that's when you find out what your religion is.
Yeah, you do to put it back together again.
So for me, that was like writing songs and working through the grief through the songwriting process. But once I got over the grief, it was like an aha moment. It's like, whoa, I'm completely free here. I can do whatever I want, outside of my schedule with my daughter. And even then, we go on more adventures than we used to, I think.
Right. You make a life with her that you wouldn't have made with her mother.
Yeah. I can make, I'm more independent with my decision-making process around how I choose to be with her and to raise her.
So what have you learned about yourself in coming through that separation and and trying to put your, and putting your life back together again?
Well, I guess the number one thing is that we as humans have a tremendous tolerance to pain. And you know, that saying, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. I absolutely believe that that happened for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're down in the bottom of that well, it's like, it's hard to see how you'll ever be happy again. But then when you start to feel the happiness coming back in, it's just, it's like a miracle. And I guess now I feel, you know, like I have a new lease on life. You know, I have this different view on freedom and a different view on who I am. You have to basically like start from scratch when you go through that experience. They say that, you know, a breakup like that is almost or worse than losing somebody, having somebody close to you die.
Right. Yeah.
Because that other person is still out there in the world. You know,
and
to remind
they
you.
Or you together have chosen to separate.
Right.
To take a.
With death, there's no choosing about it in most cases.
Yeah. And yet, it's like losing a limb on your body when somebody dies, and yet you've chosen in this situation. It's like, rending.
Yeah, and through that process, it's not just the grief of the lost relationship, it's all the grief that you've ever had. Mm-hmm. It comes right back up.
Yeah.
Because you're raw and open to that emotion, raw emotion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now I think, you know, some time has opened up. So I'm focused more on my music now, and, I'm going to be putting out an album shortly, which is something I've wanted to do since I was a kid. Now I finally have the opportunity to do it, the freedom in life to make it a reality.
What have you... I want to go back to the grief a bit, and I know that may, but not so much to explore your particular experience of grief, but how has understanding grief affected, has it affected the way in which you do activism?
That's a good question. I think as activists nowadays, we have to come to terms with grief, and we have to be able to experience it in our work.
Why?
Because there's so much pain in the world, and activism, I believe, is a reaction to that grief. It's what we do so that people don't have to experience that pain in the future. So whether it's environmental activism and healing the pain of the planet, and the grief knowing that we could lose everything, you know, our whole existence as human beings on this planet, that's a tremendous weight to carry on one shoulder. So you have to be able to process that grief in healthy ways so that it doesn't eat you alive. And I think
it eats you alive? What happens to you when you get overcome by that?
Oh, well, I've had a lifelong battle with depression, and, so I can get in a pretty deep funk for a long time if I'm not conscious of that that process that's going on.
Right.
And I won't sleep, you know, I'll be just lying awake at night thinking about all the things that are wrong with the world and, you know, doomsday scenarios.
Right, right.
But I think the activism is the antidote. If we get out into the world and take action, that's directly related to the pain we see in the world or the problems that we see in the world.
Right.
That's the one thing that we can do on an individual level and as groups to keep from getting overwhelmed by the grief.
Right, right. And when you talk about being overwhelmed and what it does to you, and there, what I've associated with people who get stuck in the grief is there's kind of a meanness. There's a meanness to themselves and to others from which it's hard to be generous. It's hard to be an activist who's more inviting than coercive. And that's a delicate balance.
Yeah,
to
and
maintain.
You see both sides of that in any movement. Yeah. And I think with social movements, you tend to draw from all ends of the spectrum, but you get the super creative leader types that are just like wide open with their heart and their consciousness. Mm-hmm. And you also get people that have been completely brutalized by the world, suffer from mental health issues, are highly cynical and reactionary. And they're, you know,
and sometimes people move from both camps.
Yeah, exactly.
Just where they are. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I also wanted to, much of what activism involves, and this has taken me a long time to understand from my own work, is that what I ask people to do or to consider changing provokes grief in them. Because I am saying maybe there's a different way, and yet they may be attached to what it is that's being challenged or changed. Has understanding the people you are challenging or opposing and their own grief, has that begun to affect your work in any way, or is that a new topic?
Yeah, as a younger activist, it was really easy to have hateful thoughts and feelings towards the people and the institutions that I was opposing. Mm-hmm. But now, having had a lot more life experience and, you know, through my professional life and through activism, I've rubbed elbows with a lot bigger cross section of our country, and
what does that
everyone has you? Everyone has the same values at heart. It's about family and the safety of their family. You know, that's the number one thing that people
and
are
if
concerned
it's not
with.
Biological family, it's the loved ones that substitute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's, if you can find that common thread and have a more open mind and an open heart, I think you're much more effective as an activist, because, you know, oppositional activism, you're pushing people away. And
often, yes.
The open
yes.
arms activism, I think, is much more effective in converting people. But I think there's definitely a place for militancy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I think. You can act in a way that's highly challenging to institutions and individuals that, you know, might be perceived as violence from the outside and is often painted as such by the media. But I think you're acting like in a body that has cancer, you're the chemotherapy. You know, you have to destroy stuff to make to save the patient.
Forceful, borderline violent. What I'm hearing in you is that being a male and an activist is one of those few environments where you are permitted to be a forceful male in this culture and not either glorifying the force or judging it negative. And that as a point of view I had never really gotten my head around, but that's interesting.
Well, I think there's a vast difference between injuring someone bodily as compared to like breaking a window.
Right. But we have tended to lump all violent acts into one condemnation.
Right.
As a culture, and that.
However, that a lot of violence is accepted in our culture.
It's either accepted or rejected.
Right.
Almost an extreme and almost a psychopath.
So the violence that is involved in war and policing is a social norm, whereas you know, militant activism that's, I believe, nonviolent, that may break some windows or, you know, a car gets flipped over.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
considered that's would almost be labeled terrorism.
No, I want to play with that because I wouldn't label it terrorism. But what fascinates me is that we live in a culture of where escalation, mindless escalation, is often justified.
Mm-hmm.
Whether and regardless of what side you're on, but when you're trying to be arms open and forceful at the same time, that escalation is going to be very carefully defined.
Yeah.
And the same would be true for law enforcement with that same attitude in mind. And it's just, it's finding that attitude which puts some reins on it and makes you focus and not so indiscriminately escalate.
Yeah.
But where is your work going now in terms of your activism? How is it changing now?
Well, I think in terms of We Are Seneca Lake, we're holding the space and biding our time. And it's just a matter of time before Crestwood or whoever buys them up next is going to be bankrupt. And it's just a matter of time before the politicians decide not to allow that project to go forward. So that's one case, but there's, you know,
but it's kind of a so waiting much... game. And as long as the prices go the way they're going, the bankruptcy is inevitable.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the whole fossil fuel infrastructure. It's mm-hmm. kind of in its last gasps right now. More and more people are getting involved in pipeline blockades. There's the gas storage thing. There's, opposition to the tar sands and opposition on every level, too. There's the direct action, mm-hmm. which I'm involved in, but there's also the advocacy and policy stuff that's going on within the bureaucracy. So so I think that's the main focus right now. I guess my life is just political all around, so it's mm-hmm. it's hard to differentiate where the activism stops and life starts. I guess it's all one and the same.
No, and that's not my question. My question is the arc of divorce and grief and the creativity of music mm-hmm. and coming to terms with grief is deepening something you've learned through activism already, but you're learning it in a deeply personal way. How do you see that going back and feeding the kinds of projects you take on and the way you take them on?
Well, I think, as I said before, I've had this new sense of freedom and the possibilities to get involved in things are more open uh-huh. for me. So I've tried to step up as much as I can. But also, because I don't have my kids all the time,
right.
it opens the possibility for me to take higher risks in terms of what I'm doing with my activism. I've been arrested, three times in the last year and a half, which I probably wouldn't have done 2 years ago.
Right. If you were being relied on as a constant
right.
caregiver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one thing. And I think, I don't know, I've come through the last year and a half and I feel like much clearer about who I am as a person and much stronger in terms of my ability to help lead others. And my decision-making is based more on compassion and clarity than on cynicism and fear. So I think that's molded me into a much more highly effective vessel, as it were.
So compassion and clarity versus cynicism and fear. And cynicism and fear is aimed at the issue or at the opposition?
Both.
Yeah. And so now there's more compassion and clarity about both the issue and the opposition.
Yeah. And much less fear-based activism.
That would really slow down the tendency to escalate.
Right. I think it's very easy when you're in a protest setting to be very standoffish with the police.
Right.
But I think We Are Seneca Lake is teaching all of us that are involved and people on the outside how effective it is to just stand your ground and not view the police as the enemy.
Right.
We're kind of working with them, not just on the line when we're getting arrested, we're being very cooperative, but also there's constant lines of communication with the sheriff over in Schuyler County about what we're doing.
Right.
We're not telling them, oh, we're going to show up at this time, but we have like rules of engagement, I guess.
Right. I'd say. Right. Right. And I guess because of my interest is opening the lines of communication so each side sees the person in the other. And yeah. not just in theoretical terms, but you talk about your kids, you talk about, what sports they're in, you talk about your own exercise or what you do.
Well, it helps that I have a friend that I grew up with in high school who's a sergeant over in Schuyler County, so.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. So you already have that ability to model that rapport.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to live it. We're trying. I'm working with a group of clergy and law enforcement locally to have those kinds of both informal get to know you, let's see where we go here, just in each other's lives, and then let's address some of the institutional issues.
Yeah, I think nonviolence training would be a key thing for law enforcement to kind of turn the page on some of the stuff that's been highly criticized in the last couple years mm-hmm. around Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. and specifically here in Ithaca, the Sean Greenwood shooting and Keith Shumway. I think we've had direct experience of the stuff that's happening nationally that people are so upset about. Mm-hmm. And I think our community has been very effective at raising the issue and liaising with the police department, but I think there's still a ways to go.
Right.
Because it's a big institution and it has strong traditions, and not all of them are pretty, you know.
Right. No. And that's exactly right. But what I hold on to is we have major issues with institutional racism and institutional classism, but we also have huge issues with institutionalized disrespect for anyone not like ourselves. And we give great permission to express that in all sorts of damning language and attitudes across the board, whether we're police or civilians or whatever. And we get it in the campaigns. We get it, you know, in all of the different campaigns in both parties.
Yeah, and social media has really opened the door to that in a whole new way, because you say things online that you would never say to someone's face.
Right.
Because there is that artificial barrier of the internet.
We also are saying things to each other's face, which are really, we're not reflecting on very, very well or very quickly, or across where we see an institutional divide. You're not like me, so I can say anything or do anything to you or about you. The other piece was, comes back to this, the escalation piece. We've escalated to litigation, we've escalated to yelling, we've escalated to all sorts of dehumanizing the other, and we escalate to weapons and all sorts of form, you know, violence, but it's across the board. It's not just law enforcement. It's we carry more guns as a culture than, you know, and from lots of different political points of view.
Every time there's a mass shooting, there's a spike in gun sales.
Yeah.
And I think the NRA was rejoicing after the San Bernardino shooting. It's good for business.
Yep.
And war is good for business to the people in power.
In the short term.
Yeah. And then you have people like Trump, not just Trump. I mean, it happens on all sides of the spectrum, but,
sure.
It's been very disturbing to see how, the people that would like to be our leaders, are escalating. We've gone from dog whistle racism to blatant like fascism,
right.
Like in a very short period of time. And, you know, we have to stop it now, you know, because we've seen what happens.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
History is full of examples of what can happen.
Right.
If this is unchecked. And since there are so many guns in this country, that makes it extra important that we deal with it now.
Right, and to not be afraid of the guns. I mean, that sounds outrageous, but if you're really going to address it, you have to put your fear at the door and step out. And so, we're on the same page, I think, on that one, for sure. Let's go to a piece of music. What would you like to go to next?
Let's pick up the pace a little bit.
Sure.
So I'm very into a genre that called psychobilly. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
No,
but it's kind of more more punk rock than just rockabilly or country music.
Yeah.
But this is heavy trash. Yeah.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour has been Josh Dolan. So Josh, the way we kind of work through the end, the closing of the show is to look at what is it that you do to take care of yourself, to take care of yourself physically, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, and how do you know when you need to do it?
Well, this time of year, I know. On Mondays, I have a standing commitment to the softball diamond. So that's a regular thing that really, I've been playing with this group of friends ever since I've been in Ithaca.
Cool.
It's a different group of friends now, but it's the same team.
Right. Things evolve, yeah.
Yep. So that's how I get my exercise. And also, we have a lot of fun on the field. So yeah. For me, I'm not necessarily... your typical Ithaca person, not to make overgeneralizations, but no yoga, no meditation, no herbal tea.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, it's about fun. That's how I unwind. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whether it's playing music or going out dancing or just being social, I think that's for me that's restorative. But the other thing is, I with my sugar bush, I have access to a really beautiful piece of property. That's wooded, and I think there's something about being out in the woods that's just very peaceful and calming and restorative.
Right. How do you know that you're not having fun and you need to step out and you need to step back?
My body tells me. I'm almost 40, so my body's not as resilient as it used to be. So, whether it's like an acidy stomach or just feeling like I have no energy. I tend to run myself ragged at times, and then I kind of just like have to collapse for a couple of days. Especially during maple season, I'm like boiling maple syrup constantly and like losing sleep.
How many trees do you tap?
About 600.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I also ride my bike a lot during the riding season, so that's primarily how I get my exercise. It's not I'm not riding just to ride. I'm riding from here to there, it's commuting.
Right.
So,
and just the way, and this is going to sound silly, you don't meditate, but you look at. You have a gaze that's wide-eyed, open, and that's the same. I grew up around people who were born in the 1890s and early 1900s because my dad died, and they were kind of the guys that were hanging around town. Who kind of looked after me as I was growing up. And they would just look at you with this kind of wide-open wonder. Which was a kind of a pre-modern way of being in the world, and that quality is engaging for the one being observed, but it's also opening one's heart, opening one's life. And I sense that in you, at least in the way we've had some exchanges here this morning.
Yeah, and I was talking to somebody about it yesterday about, I don't meditate, but, with my songwriting, that's a very meditative process.
Yes.
But also, I spend a lot of time with my thoughts. Yeah. It's not exactly meditation. I'm not like focusing on my breathing or anything like that, but I am, you know, trying to be conscious.
You spend time with yourself, which means that in some sense you make peace with yourself and you become comfortable in your skin, which is the traditional statement for spiritual maturity.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it took a long while to get here, I guess.
Yeah. But. And how did you know you needed to be intentional about it?
Making mistakes.
Well, yeah.
Making a lot of mistakes that affected other people.
Yeah.
That's one of my biggest fears is hurting people, you know, emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so I try to carry myself with as much respect for other people as I can muster.
Right.
But
with the fear, there is also has to be forgiveness, because we are going to hurt each other, and that's not a negotiable fact, because it just happens even with the best of intentions and the best skill.
Yeah. But so if I perceive that I've injured somebody, I try to immediately rectify it by asking for forgiveness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, there's some things I've done in the past that I haven't asked for forgiveness about, and you know, I'm still carrying those things.
And they will sort themselves out.
Maybe
you will.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're carrying them, my sense is that you're still sorting them.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Josh, it's been really good to get to know you.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy the show, and you know, I try to tune in when I can. Usually on Sunday morning, I'm pretty busy though.
I bet. Yeah.
When you have your days off, if you're an entrepreneur,
you're busy.
They're not
on
really
Sunday
days
morning.
Off.
Yeah. 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 No, I am there too. What would you like to close with?
Okay. This is a Irish punk band. This is, Roots, Radicals, Rockers, and Reggae.
Cool. I've heard of it.
Come on now. don't want it all.